We gather here this brave spring afternoon, here in this place he loved so dearly, surrounded by so many memories of grief and gladness, of disillusionment and admiration, of gratitude and grace, surrounded and sustained by so great a cloud of witnesses, we gather here in peace and in strength to mourn the death and to celebrate the life of the Reverend Roy Dennis Phillips. Come, let us worship together. Tomorrow there is still a defeat to remember. As long as the self can say I, it is impossible not to rebel. As long as there is an accidental virtue, there is a necessary vice. And the garden cannot exist. The miracle cannot occur. For the garden is the only place there is, but you will not find it until you have looked for it everywhere and found nowhere that is not a desert. The miracle is the only thing that happens, but to you it will not be apparent until all events have been studied and nothing happens that you cannot explain, and life is the destiny you are bound to refuse until you have consented to die. Therefore, see without looking, hear without listening, breathe without asking. The inevitable is what will seem to happen to you purely by chance. The real is what will strike you as really absurd. Unless you are certain you are dreaming, it is certainly a dream of your own. Unless you exclaim, "There must be some mistake," you must be mistaken.
My friends, we gather this afternoon as one family, bound together by our loss, united by our grief, and some lingering confusion at the sudden and unexpected death of Roy Phillips. His life was cut short, and we join his beloved extended family in marking his passing. Death comes to us all. And it awakens us to the fact that our lives are far more precious and far more fragile than we ordinarily assume. These words from Adlai Stevenson were frequently used by Roy for memorial services. We are always saying farewell in this world. We are always standing at the edge of a loss, attempting to retrieve some meaning from the silence. Something which was precious is gone. Stevenson goes on to say, our lives take their meaning from the interlacing with other lives. When one life is ended, those into which it was woven are also carrying a sense of brokenness. Neither you nor I, but that only the hand of time, the mysterious grace of healing, slow, sure and steady, can lift that blanket of brokenness. Our liberal faith does not diminish death by attempting to explain it. Death cannot and should not be explained away. Grief is something to be lived through, and it can be a gift. When Roy died, this congregation was in the midst of clarifying its relationship to him and his legacy. Some of that work will continue, for it is our work to do. What I want to hold up in sharp relief this afternoon is the complexity of every human life. As Arthur Alexander Solzhenitsyn reminds us, the line separating good and evil runs through every human heart. And there is no denying this fact in our own lives and in Roy's. So I ask you, are our souls large enough to hold this truth? Can we all hold this truth graciously? That we are all a complex blend of gifts and depth in the many ways that we fall short of our ideals. This is what the spiritual life asks us to do. To hold life and death in tender balance. To hold the good and the difficult. The pain and the glory. And as best as we are able, we hold the complexity of life, and we hold the complexity complexity of a relationship and a life. Even after someone has touched our lives, has died, our relationships continue to grow and change. This is one of the surprises of grief, for as we change and grow in depth and understanding, so do our relationships. Our relationship to Roy will continue to grow and change, even now that he is gone from us. There is, of course, no right way to grieve. Each of us finds our way. Each of us needs time to grieve alone. But we also need to return to our communities of friends and family. Just as villagers return to the well so that they might quench their thirst, we need to seek out one another as a source of nourishment, strength, and comfort. This larger congregation seeks to hold us all in a loving embrace of strength and tradition, wisdom, and clarity. Together, today, we gather at the well to hold one another in the depth of our feelings, and to be reminded of the complexity of every human life and the fragility of every human life.
Source of radiance and reason, thou whose love endows and animates our lives, be with us now as we would be with one another. Lend us courage. Lend us comfort as we would encourage and comfort one another. Help us, we pray, to remember the virtues of this good man, and to let those virtues take root in our lives. Help us to hold this place he loved so well for so long, that it might be a living memorial to him and to all those here gathered who hold its concerns close to their heart. Strengthen us in our resolve to be a people of faith. Faith in the healing power of love. Faith in the creative energies of the universe. Faith in the mystery far beyond our knowing. Teach us to grieve well. Teach us, we pray, to honor Roy's memory in caring for each other. May it be so. And amen.
Was a bride married to amazement, I was a bridegroom taking the world in my arms. When it's over, I don't want to wonder if I have made of my life something particular and real. I don't want to find myself sighing and frightened or full of argument. I don't want to end up simply having visited this world.
And this, which Roy loved, and especially because there was not a traditional religious word in it, and yet how much it was about faith. Lie back, daughter. Let your head be tipped back in the cup of my hand. Gently, and I will hold you. Spread your arms wide, lie out on the stream, and look high at the gulls. A dead man's float is face down. You will dive and swim soon enough where this tidewater ebbs to the sea. Daughter, believe me, when you tire on the long thrash to your island, lie up and survive. As you float now where I held you and let go, remember when fear cramps your heart what I told you. Lie gently and wide to the light year stars. Lie back, and the sea will hold you.
Will you open your hymnals to number 718, All Souls, by the great Unitarian Universalist poet May Sarton, who spoke from this lectern many years ago. And let us read responsibly. Did someone say that there would be an end? Has been once so interwoven cannot be raveled, nor the gift ungiven.
Now the dead move from all us, still glowing.
Mother and child, lover and lover mated, are wound and bound together and in flowing. And memory makes kings and queens of us. Shelter in the warmth within, listen and feel new cherished, new forgiven.
As the lost human voices speak through us and blend our complex love, our morning without end.
Thank you.
I joined Unity Church in 1965, just after Arthur Foote had come back from sabbatical and the church had moved back into this renovated sanctuary after being displaced by the fire. And so it was that after the retirement of Arthur Foote and a year of interim ministry, I first met Roy Phillips, the new young candidate for the ministry of this church. He had been in ordained ministry only 3 years, serving what is now the Olympia Brown Unitarian Universalist Church in Racine, Wisconsin. As he told the story one Sunday after church in Racine, a group of people he did not know came up to him and said, "We are members of the search committee from Unity Church of St. Paul. We would like to talk with you." After that first unexpected conversation, and others which would follow, the almost 30-year-old minister moved with his wife Judy to what was the parsonage then on Goodrich Avenue in St. Paul, Minnesota. Roy had grown up in Somerville, Massachusetts. It was a tough neighborhood. Roy grew up in a scrappy, tough-it-out world. For reasons I'm not completely clear about, Roy and his sister Diana were sent to the Unitarian Sunday School nearby. He recalled once that he was taught by a Sunday School teacher deeply invested in both religion and rational science. He said he was taught that when the Bible said Jesus walked on water, it really meant he walked on sandbars. I always wondered if it was the teachings in that Sunday school which made him so committed to a good religious education for the children. It was certainly high on his agenda when he arrived here. He had a curious, brilliant mind and began his college career at Northeastern University with a major in chemical engineering. He became active in the young adult group at First Unitarian in Boston. One weekend, he went to a lecture by the theologian Henry Nelson Wyman. Wyman used the phrase creative interchange to describe God, which he understood as a verb. Roy was captivated. He said that Wyman had several lectures scheduled in Boston that week, and he followed him all around Boston, listening to him. At the end of the week, he decided to change his major and transfer to Boston University, where he majored in philosophy. From there, he went to meet the Lombard Theological School in Chicago. Some young ministers think I'm the one who coined the phrase, "Don't get it right, get it written," because I had it in a sign over my desk at Meadville as I wrote my thesis. But actually, it was Roy who coined that phrase when one time I called him in despair about ever getting my thesis done. I did get it done, and I think that lots of other theological papers there have been written in that same spirit, which is not about accuracy, but at least about finishing the task at hand and moving on. Roy did his internship at Boston at King's Chapel, Unitarian, where Joe Barth was the senior minister. Joe became a kind of father figure for him, and he needed one. Joe was a no-nonsense minister, and he taught Roy to be the same. During Roy's candidating week here at Unity, he talked about religious education and the lack of appropriate curriculum for children in the Unitarian Universalist Association. After he moved here and began his ministry, he asked several of us who had experience in education to consider writing a curriculum for children. No one else was doing it the way he thought it should be done, he said. Actually, Laurel Lane and I went to Boston to talk with ministers and the people in the religious education department at the UUA, and we came back convinced that Roy was right. And so, seven of us, along with Roy, set out to write that curriculum. It took over 2 years, as I remember, and we met once every week with what we had written in hand to critique each other's work. Roy provided the theological and historical grounding for what we were doing. In fact, it actually was where I got my theological education. It was hard work. But sometime around the year 1975, we introduced the curriculum here and eventually in many UU churches across the country. Roy had the uncommon capacity to pick the right people for the job, recruit them, and then keep them at the edge of the task even when it took years. The curriculum called Images for Our Lives was a monumental contribution to the religious education of hundreds of UU children around the mid-70s. Not long into the curriculum work, Roy called me one day and now infamously asked, "Can you type?" "Yes," I said, "I can." He was searching for someone to be the assistant to the minister here. Was I interested? "I'll think about it," I said. "I have a 2-year-old at home. I didn't know if going to work was a good idea." We both agreed I would talk with Elizabeth Peterson to seek her advice. She was a pillar of this church and taught child development. I consisted her a trusted advisor. So I went to Elizabeth, who said she thought if I stayed home in Minnesota with a 2-year-old all winter, it wouldn't be good. She recommended I take the job. And so I did. 20 years later, after I was long gone from here, I found out that Roy had called her. Why was I surprised? He had called her, he told her I was going to call, and he hoped that she would say yes. Those of you who knew Elizabeth knew she had a mind of her own. But fortunately that day for me, she agreed with Roy and gave me the permission I needed. I was the assistant to the minister for 5 years, which it turned out meant everything that you needed to do if you didn't have a theological degree. I was the minister, assistant to the minister for 5 years until I went to theological school myself. Those 5 years were a wild ride. He had a deep and far-reaching vision for this church. There are few ministers who could match his gift for preaching. And as he did for so many, he gave me poems that enriched my life and helped me ground my spiritual practice. And at the same time, he was also still the scrappy little kid from Somerville who had learned early on that anything worth doing was worth fighting for. And being engaged, whether in a curriculum project or a vision of the church or in a relationship, meant being intensely engaged. His relationships were always complicated. In some way which I never fully understood, the intensity and the complication were also how he knew that he was alive. I remember seeing him at Prairie Group. It's a minister's study group he went to every year, including this most recent November. The group has assembled for 60 years, I think, close to 60 years. I remember seeing him there after his book, Letting Go, had been published. I said, "How could you write a book about letting go?" He said more than anyone, he more than anyone I knew could rag on something long after it should have been finished. He said, "Well, I'm working on letting go." So I figured while I was working on letting go, I should write a book about it. So he did. Emerson's quote, "Life passed preaching as life passed through the fire of thought," was Roy's method. So while we suffered his flaws, struggled with his challenges, we also received his wisdom, often in the very areas he was struggling to understand about himself. Roy and Judy's son Joe was a good friend of my son Peter. They're just about a year apart in age. Once a week in those days, they were six and 5 and 6 years old. Once a week, Peter went to Roy and Judy's house after school to play with Joe. One time, Roy was watching them while reading a book in the living room. They thought up the idea on the second floor of taking some metal bookcase shelving that hadn't been assembled and using the shelving as a sled to go down the stairwell in the parsonage. Joe said to Peter, "You go first," which he often did, and Peter often also did. I never figured that out. And Peter agreed and then got down on the shelf and, of course, careened down the stairwell with a great racket, running into a chest at the bottom of the stairwell and flipping off the shelf. Fortunately, Peter was unhurt. Amazing, Peter was unhurt, but I'm not sure what scared Roy the most. The possibility that Peter could have been killed, or the wrath that he knew was coming from the boys' mothers when they got back. He was actually quite chagrined. I cherish, actually, that memory. Like you, I was stunned last week when I heard that Roy had died of a heart attack. He had toughed out his surgery for pancreatic cancer. I know no one who'd lived longer than he did after 4 years. And only last month he'd been given a clean bill of health, something he had worried about a lot, of course. He wrote a friend an email that said, "I've been to the doctor and everything is fine, so if I die soon, it won't be from anything serious." Somebody should write that over their desk so it'll be remembered forever. So even though it wasn't from anything serious, Roy has died. And even though it... And even though it is ironic that he wrote the book on letting go, we are the ones who now must say farewell and pray for blessing and strength to live all our days in the days to come. Amen.
Thank you.
collage of voices is a collage of reflections and remembrances that have been sent to us from members and former members and friends of this congregation as they have remembered the legacy of Roy's ministry. And please forgive us for editing. We actually edited as little as we could. And please forgive us for that. But it was an important, we felt it was an important story to be told. This from Marion Watson. Roy Phillips was in awe of the universe and everything in it, both great and small. That was his religion. He didn't believe in a jealous, demanding, or personal God. At this time of year, he was fond of the following by Archibald MacLeish. Why, it was wonderful. Why, all at once there were leaves. Leaves at the end of a dry stick. Small, alive. Leaves out of wood. It was wonderful. You can't imagine. They came back by the wood path, and the earth loosened, the earth relaxed. There were flowers out of the earth, think of it, and oak trees oozing new green at the tips of them, and flowers squeezed out of clay, soft flowers, limp stalks flowering. While it was like a dream, it happened so quickly. All of a sudden, it happened. I was spiritually replenished by his services. I gathered myself together and went into the week with calmness and optimism.
And from Cynthia Mills, when my husband died suddenly of a brain aneurysm, Roy was able to take the ramblings of a grieving wife, children, sisters, and sister-in-laws, and weave a eulogy that spoke truth to all of us. I'm truly grateful for Roy's ability to be an active listener. This is what I will choose to remember about him.
And this from Barbara Ford. Roy brought to us words of wisdom in his sermons and writing. This is one of his newsletters from 1982. This is it. This is the day we've been waiting for. If my words come to you when you are down in the dumps, you may ask, what's so special about today? We notice the specialness of this day when we consider its imaginable opposite. No day. That is unlife, non-being, death. Your chest rises and falls. Air streams in and out of your lungs. Blood courses through your veins. You are aware. You are alive. But there's this that I am worried about. There's that which troubles me. There are these things going on today which keep me from enjoying myself, my world, other people, life. I don't want to be hard on you, yet I must say it. If you plan to wait to live fully until a day comes when there are no obstacles, no hardships, then you will wait past your time for waiting. Life is to be lived, enjoyed now in this time, right now in the midst of all the troublesome circumstances. This is it. This is the day we've been waiting for.
From Beth and Gil Olson. I don't know if Roy was the force behind starting the Personal Ministries program back a few years ago in Unity, but it made a profound impact on me, leading me to serve Unity in a unique way for me and a satisfying way. The idea of a personal ministry has stayed with me. And as I take the time to determine my next step in service to the church, it is a guiding focus. I will always remember one time during one of Roy's sermons when he said that many of the congregation had mentioned to him that each time they sit in the pews on Sunday morning and he stepped into the pulpit, they silently said or prayed to themselves, "Make it a good one."
And this from Lisa Day. Roy was my mentor, colleague, friend. Mostly, he was my minister.
And from Betsy Turner. I attended Unity the entire time that Roy was our minister, and I always enjoyed his sermons. When my parents died, I was most pleased with the time that he took with us, the family members, and what he said about them. He had a good way of bringing up the few traits that weren't always perfect to make the eulogies seem more realistic. I remember that he read a wonderful poem at my mother's service that said, among other things, "Let me die working," since she, as he did now, died suddenly. It was not easy being the minister to follow the esteemed Arthur Foote, but I think that Roy also gave us plenty of good insights over the many years.
This from Marty Rossman. Roy used well-selected poetry in both his sermons and his newsletter notes. This poem was in a newsletter many years ago. I've saved it with my Christmas decorations. When I opened the boxes, this message has been there for me over the years. It was Roy, helping me to get through the too busy holiday season. "Take Joy," by Freya Giovanni. "I salute you. There is nothing I can give you which you have not. But there is much that while I cannot give, you can take. No heaven can come to us unless our hearts find rest in it today. Take heaven. No peace lies in the future which is not hidden in this present instant. Take peace. The gloom of the world is but a shadow. Behind it yet, within our reach, is joy. Take joy."
From Karen Buggs. In the fall of 1976, Roy graciously invited the Buggs family to use the Unity Courtyard to dedicate our newly adopted Emmy Jo from Korea. Our priest friend, Tom, performed a Catholic ritual with Unitarian themes, written by Dick and Karen. The courtyard was beautiful in location, mood, and a symbolic stepping stone between the spirituality of our past and of our present. In 1998, Roy married our son, Jesse. Prior to the ceremony, he met with the young people many times, though time and individual growth ultimately sent the couple in separate directions. Roy's efforts were valued and appreciated by us all.
This from Gene Olson. Roy tended to push the envelope at times. I remember that he had the recording of "Fast Cars" by Tracy Chapman played at a service as one of the readings. One of my most vivid memories was when he danced down the aisle wearing a new pair of blue suede shoes that Ray McGee had given him. And the postlude was the music, of course.
Howard and Betsy Guthman say that they have many, many recollections of Roy. Trying to write a single recollection is impossible for us. We've known him since the day Howard, Jim Klingle, and Willard Fryhofer sat down with Roy at the old Covered Wagon restaurant in downtown St. Paul to work out Roy's first contract with the church. We each served on the board of trustees while Roy was minister. He officiated at three of our children's weddings. A daughter babysat for his children, and our daughter, who was his coordinator of adult education for a year or so, became a Unitarian Universalist minister with Roy's encouragement. He was a complicated person, at times inflexible and insistent on his way, at times distant and preoccupied, at times warm and friendly. May we remember Roy for the positive ways he impacted our lives and be at peace with the difficulties.
This from Eric Lane. Among Roy's immense and varied gifts to the majority of this community are those that shine in the sunlight of an outer view. I include the tools and lessons that Roy offered through his skills as a listener, a healer, teacher, writer, and visionary leader. They include engaging sermons, an emphasis on lay leadership, a certain quality and depth in the worship services he created. In his years at Unity, the way of being that he encouraged nurtured a congregation filled with independent and spiritual thinkers. He cultivated a congregation whose members are able to find and define their place in the world. But there's also an interview point which takes shape. I include events about which we whisper and lower our gaze, lessons that take place in the shadows where we walk a fine line between truth and safety, where too our fear of a concealed something causes us to err on the side of security, where protection can turn into a barrier behind which anonymity festers and grows, where the tools of influence, power, and control can become all important and sometimes absolute. From time to time, I live in these shadows. My guess is that most of us have been there. My way of being includes a measure of truth-telling, a quality that sometimes gets me into trouble. Yet it is that quality that illuminates complicated landscapes. Roy was my minister and my friend. Thank you, Roy, for revealing to me the importance and the complexity of truth.
From Dick Buds. It was the late 70s. I, a gay man withering in a faith tradition, unable to affirm my dignity, came to Unity. Roy Phillips's preaching won my careful attention. Religion is about the descent into inner health, which is revealed in pain and in joy, in fear and in courage. Inner health. For years, I had only known outer sickness. Roy's counsel was to befriend the darkness, to tap into its healing wellspring. Slowly, I moved beyond unbending orthodoxy into the energizing wisdom of lively imagination, into poetry, myth, fables, and dreams. Roy's ministry stretched my vision and awakened my capacity to celebrate life. His ministry continues to touch each new day.
This from Maura Williams. I enjoy recalling about Roy his enthusiasm for wrestling with an idea, more often than not, an idea with religious dimension, long enough to figure out how to operationalize it. If a concept like, for instance, Parker Palmer's Ministry of the Lady caught his imagination, you knew that Roy would be talking about this captivating idea with anyone he could engage, minister, colleague, to church custodian, exploring it in conversation, turning it over and over in speech like a stone in a tumbler until he had all the facets shining. The idea would first show up in Sunday's sermon, but Roy's sermons by the 1990s no longer involved written manuscripts, but instead he spoke from loosely drawn word maps that connected various tangents and associations to the initial thought. This necessitated the introduction of taping the Sunday sermons, since a written account was unavailable. Sometimes his words would all come together in a grand synergy, but occasionally, Roy would lament that he wished the 9:30 instead of the 11 o'clock service was recorded, because it had all come together so much more successfully the first time around. Whatever the grand idea, the usefulness was probably not yet exhausted by the sermon. So it might next show up in a proposed improvement for the dynamics of a particular committee, or manifest as Roy's latest attempt at revising the congregational governance structure. Or it might find its way into his latest articulation of Unitarian Universalism, honed this time to only four overarching themes. Or it might seed a new adult education program. Always, the idea needed to provide insight and access to the holy, personal transformation that would enrich one's contribution to the larger community. Then it was on to the next idea.
This from James Deers, a close friend to Joe Phillips. My clearest memories of Roy are from my teens. Joe was and continues to be a dear friend, and as adolescents are wont to do, Joe and I did plenty of hanging out around Roy and Karen's house after school. We listened to music, raided the refrigerator, and made each other laugh in the deepest and most satisfying way. While most of my friends' parents were content to let us voluntarily quarantine ourselves in bedrooms or basements, Roy often made a point of popping his head in to stir up the conversation, levity, questions, and an occasional debate. He never seemed to encroach on our fun or tried too hard to be the dreaded cool dad. Rather, he seemed to respect the fact that we were thinkers. At an age when it was easy for my friends and me to question our impending adulthood, I'm thankful to Roy for gently prodding our intellectual curiosity and affirming that the world could benefit from what we had to say, to think, to feel, to do.
This from Lisa Phillips. I am very grateful to all of you, to your continued presence, to my father's spirit, and your celebration of his life and time here. My heart is full of love and gratitude for the support we have been offered by many, many friends, family members, and acquaintances. I also add my gratitude to the Unity Congregation for the life and living that it instilled in me as a young person. Thank you for holding the space with openness and peace while everyone works through all of this in their own unique and multifaceted way. I understand that this is not an easy thing, and I am aware that it brings up a lot of different responses in different people. My only hope is the following. May we feel compassion instead of hatred, love instead of anger, and acceptance not only of others, but of ourselves as well. May each of us do all of the above in a mindful way.
These are reflections from Karen Welly. My thoughts are with all of you here today to celebrate and honor Roy's life and ministry here at Unity Church. I guess I could say I shared some of that ministry for a time as a wife, mother, choir member, Sunday school teacher, building committee chair, children's musical costumer, silent auction decorator, karaoke singer, and hostess too, and guest of many, many of our Unity friends. Many of you I still call friend, and I'm sorry that I can't be there with you to share this moment. I'm in Tucson, where I belong, with our family, with our kids, helping them to remember and to say goodbye. As you all know, Roy was a complicated guy. His death marks the passing of a chapter in my own life, a chapter which was good in many ways. Roy taught this pragmatic woman a lot about celebration and appreciation. He taught me how to properly baste an egg. He taught me and the kids how to ring in the new year the Albanian way with spinach, onion pie, moussaka, feta, olives, and retsina. He could whistle with the best of them. I can still conjure up the sound of the garage door slamming and the predictable whistle to follow as he made his way up the sidewalk at the end of the day. But after 12 years of ups and downs and some extended effort, our differences won out over our similarities, and we made the decision to part in 1994. It made sense to us to do so at the time, and still does, but it was a bit hard on others in our family and in the church. It took our family a few years to figure out our new relationships with each other, to let go of the hurt, to heal, and we did. We healed. We let go. Together we shared 3 weddings, 2 births, a graduation or two, and just 11 days before Roy, the death of Grandma Welly, my mom. What I saw as Roy's wife was his love of Unity Church. The growth and strength of this congregation drove him. His absolute insistence upon providing a place for spiritual reflection, for quiet, for music, for soulfulness drove him. For finding just the right words, the right readings that would unlock the soul. For reaching underneath and exposing the hidden meaning in the obvious. He fought for these things, and sometimes he fought too hard, and sometimes not well. Roy left behind children who understood clearly their dad's Myers-Briggs type. Lisa would tell you the letters, but she called him the field marshal. They learned to love him as he was, sometimes cantankerous, sometimes infuriating, sometimes arrogant and self-centered, but also so very proud of each of them, not only for their accomplishments, but for their strengths in meeting him head on. He shared with them a love of music, especially Frank Sinatra and the Doobie Brothers, of art, of poetry, and lately his love of the Sonoma Desert. He spent his last weekend with 21-year-old Nick sharing a macro photography class in the desert. We spoke last Monday night. He was so proud of Nick and so excited to go to see his new granddaughter Selma and her big sister Kenza, and he got to do that. He admitted to becoming the sort of overbearing grandpa showing pictures to anyone who'd come within range that he had made fun of in past years. To quote, "You've seen one grandchild, you've seen them all." Until Kenza and Selma. Of course. Roy was so proud of his kids and how well they all found their way in recent years. He was proud of Joe as director of Morocco's Amadist Educational Exchange Program, of Luke, new homeowner and teacher to Spanish-speaking first graders in Albuquerque, of Lisa, a Spanish interpreter in the Asheville, North Carolina hospital, and of Nick, writing and producing music in New York City. and after a couple of false starts, finally finding his soulmate, Patricia, Roy died a happy man, focused on the things that truly mattered. Roy's experience coming through pancreatic cancer in 2003 changed him. It humbled him. Some of you whose friendship followed him to Tucson know that. Now it is time to say goodbye to Roy, to lay any hurt and anger down, to accept what was, to heal, and to celebrate this paradox of a brilliant preacher, a lover of life, and a sometimes flawed human being. I leave you with some words that we said together as a family each Advent season, and that are now included as a part of Nick's album cover notes. In remembrance of Dad, the light shines in the darkness, and the darkness will not put it out. Blessings and peace to you, Karen. Rebecca Parker writes, Roy served on our board of trustees at Star King School for the Ministry for 9 years, from 1995 to 2006. He was instrumental in the school's long-range planning processes that led to hiring more professional staff for the school and expanding the school's educational programs to include online courses, lay theological education, and a new master's degree. He worked hard during the school's $7 million centennial campaign, introducing the school to several significant contributors and making a major gift himself. He supported the vision of the school's leadership, mentored students, and was insightful and attentive, and always good-humored as an active member of the board. He left the board in 2006 and started teaching Unitarian Universalist theologies. He loved teaching and was deeply appreciated by the students with whom he worked. As a graduate of Meadville Lombard, Roy loved both our Unitarian Universalist theological schools. Regarding Star King, he frequently said he felt a particular fondness because of the school's daring and drive, two things we surely saw in Roy.
And this from Sue Connor. I came to Unity after reading sermons of his that someone gave me. I stayed because of him and his work. His sermons, his reading selection, his reading delivery, his crafting of a sermon, his use of communal affirmations, his well-written prayers. He gave high-quality work. He had high expectations for himself in his development and leading of a worship service.
Beloved companions, we gather here this brave spring afternoon, here in this place he loved so dearly, surrounded by so many memories of grief and gladness, of disillusionment and admiration, of gratitude and grace, surrounded and sustained by so great a cloud of witnesses. We gather here in peace, and in strength to mourn the death and to celebrate the life of the Reverend Roy Dennis Phillips. Come, let us worship together. Accidental virtue, there is a necessary vice. And the garden cannot exist. The miracle cannot occur. For the garden is the only place there is, but you will not find it until you have looked for it everywhere and found nowhere that is not a desert. The miracle is the only thing that happens, but to you, it will not be apparent until all events have been studied and nothing happens that you cannot explain, and life is the destiny you are bound to refuse until you have consented to die. Therefore, see without looking, hear without listening, breathe without asking. The inevitable is what will seem to happen to you purely by chance. The real is what will strike you as really absurd. Unless you are certain you are dreaming, it is certainly a dream of your own. Unless you exclaim, "There must be some mistake," you must be mistaken.
My friends, we gather this afternoon as one family, bound together by our loss, united by our grief, and some lingering confusion at the sudden and unexpected death of Roy Phillips. His life was cut short, and we join his beloved extended family in marking his passing. Death comes to us all. And it awakens us to the fact that our lives are far more precious and far more fragile than we ordinarily assume. These words from Adlai Stevenson were frequently used by Roy for memorial services. We are always saying farewell in this world. We are always standing at the edge of a loss, attempting to retrieve some meaning from the silence. Something which was precious is gone. Stevenson goes on to say, our lives take their meaning from the interlacing with other lives. When one life is ended, those into which it was woven are also carrying a sense of brokenness. Neither you nor I, but that only the hand of time, the mysterious grace of healing, slow, sure and steady, can lift that blanket of brokenness. Our liberal faith does not diminish death by attempting to explain it. Death cannot and should not be explained away. Grief is something to be lived through, and it can be a gift. When Roy died, this congregation was in the midst of clarifying its relationship to him and his legacy. Some of that work will continue, for it is our work to do. What I want to hold up in sharp relief this afternoon is the complexity of every human life. As Arthur Alexander Solzhenitsyn reminds us, the line separating good and evil runs through every human heart. And there is no denying this fact in our own lives and in Roy's. So I ask you, are our souls large enough to hold this truth? Can we all hold this truth graciously? That we are all a complex blend of gifts and depth in the many ways that we fall short of our ideals. This is what the spiritual life asks us to do. To hold life and death in tender balance. To hold the good and the difficult. The pain and the glory. And as best as we are able, we hold the complexity of life, and we hold the complexity of a relationship and a life. Even after someone has touched our lives, has died, our relationships continue to grow and change. This is one of the surprises of grief, for as we change and grow in depth and understanding, so do our relationships. Our relationship to Roy will continue. There is, of course, no right way to grieve. Each of us finds our way. Each of us needs time to grieve alone. But we also need to return to our communities of friends and family. Just as villagers return to the well so that they might quench their thirst, we need to seek out one another as a source of nourishment, strength, and comfort. This larger congregation seeks to hold us all in a loving embrace of strength and tradition, wisdom, and clarity. Together, today, we gather at the well to hold one another in the depth of our feelings and to be reminded of the complexity of every human life and the fragility of every